One, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, Dan Friedel, and Jill Robbins. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, heavy rains have fallen for days on Rohingya refugee camps in southern Bangladesh. The floods have destroyed houses and sent thousands of people to live with relatives or in large shelters. In a 24-hour period this week, more than 30 centimeters of rain fell on the camps in the Cox's Bazar area. It is where more than 800,000 Rohingya refugees live, the United Nations Refugee Agency said. In one day, the area received more than half the usual monthly rainfall. There is a prediction of more heavy rain in the coming days. The monsoon season of heavy rains stretches over the next 3 months. The agency said the situation is even worse because of the COVID-19 pandemic. There is currently a strict national lockdown in response to rising cases across the country, the agency said. It said 6 people died in the camps earlier this week. 5 people died in a landslide caused by the rains, and a child was carried away by floodwaters. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees said the heavy rain affected more than 12,000 refugees and it destroyed about 2,500 shelters. More than 5,000 refugees have temporarily moved into other family members' houses or community shelters, the agency said in a statement. Hannah MacDonald, a spokesperson for the UNHCR, said in an email that emergency teams have moved into the camps to help. Refugees said they were struggling to eat and drink properly. Khadisha Begum is the mother of 5 children. She said, "Due to the continuous rainfall for the last 4 days, today my house is full of water. We are not even able to eat." Begum said she fears her children will drown and die in their sleep. The refugee agency said the bad weather, landslides, and floods have increased the suffering and humanitarian needs of the Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh. Cyclones, heavy monsoon rains, floods, landslides, and other natural dangers affect the camps every year. More than 700,000 Rohingya have fled to refugee camps in Bangladesh since August 2017. That period marked the beginning of a military campaign in neighboring Myanmar against the Muslim ethnic group. The campaign followed an attack by rebels against Myanmar government forces. Myanmar is a Buddhist-majority country. The campaign included rapes, killings, and the burning of thousands of homes. Human rights groups and the United Nations called the campaign ethnic cleansing. While Bangladesh and Myanmar have tried to negotiate the return of the refugees, the Rohingya are too fearful to return home. The International Organization for Migration says Cox's Bazar, where more than 1 million Rohingya refugees live, is likely to have more disasters.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin looked to improve military relations with Vietnam during talks Thursday. The two countries are slowly gaining closer ties as they watch China's activities in the South China Sea with growing concern. The closer security relations come more than 40 years after the Vietnam War ended in 1975. President Joe Biden's administration, however, has said there are limits to the relationship unless Hanoi makes progress on human rights. Vietnam has strongly opposed China's claims to territory in the South China Sea. Vietnam has also received U.S. military equipment, including Navy ships. Before a meeting with the Vietnamese defense minister in Hanoi, Austin said the United States is not asking Vietnam to choose between countries, as some countries in the area feel China is doing. One of our central goals is ensuring that our allies and partners have the freedom and the space to chart their own futures, Austin said. On Wednesday, a U.S. Navy warship took a trip through the Taiwan Strait. While those kinds of operations are normal, they usually anger Beijing. Greg Poling is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. He said Vietnam wants to know that the U.S. is going to remain engaged militarily. It's going to continue its presence in the South China Sea. Vietnam and the Philippines are among China's biggest opponents in the territorial disputes in the South China Sea. Ignoring protests from neighboring countries, Beijing has built several islands with military equipment and airplane runways. Earlier, Vietnam had accused China of preventing its gas exploration off its southern coastline. In a speech in Singapore Tuesday, Austin condemned Beijing's actions in the South China Sea. He said China's territorial claim has no basis in international law. On Sunday, the U.S. shipped 3 million doses of the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine to Vietnam. That raised the amount given to Vietnam by the U.S. through the global COVAX program to 5 million doses. But Poling said there was a limit to how fast and far the Vietnamese would deepen ties with the Americans. I'm Dan Novak.
In the Tokyo Games, there are several new Olympic sports: karate, skateboarding, sport climbing, surfing, and baseball for men and softball for women. Baseball and softball are actually not new. The two sports have returned to Tokyo after some years away from the games.
In this week's lesson, we will look at the verbs and nouns that you hear from broadcasters and read in publications. Hopefully, it will help you understand what they are talking about.
Let us begin with baseball. A player who starts a game by throwing a baseball is called a pitcher. The pitcher will throw or pitch to an opposing batter who stands at home plate ready to hit with a bat. In the at-bat, if the batter swings and misses, it is called a strike. If the batter hits the ball cleanly and reaches a base, it is called a hit, as in,
Dave got a hit in his first at-bat.
But a hit does not give the team a point or a run in baseball. A batter, now called a runner, has to be able to move up, touch all three bases, and return to home plate to score a run.
Softball is similar to baseball, but the sport is usually played by women. On Monday, American player Kelsey Stewart hit a softball out of the ballpark for a home run to win the game 2-1. You probably heard the announcer say,
Kelsey Stewart hits a walk-off home run for the United States.
Well, it is called a walk-off when a player scores a run at the bottom of the final inning to win a game. However, Japan turned a double play in the final game on Tuesday to win the gold medal over the U.S. With two runners on first and second bases, an American player hit the ball hard. The ball bounced off a Japanese player and was caught by Mana Atsumi in the air for the first out. Atsumi then threw the ball to second base to get the second out for a double play. There are two different karate competitions in Tokyo called kata and kumite. Kata is a one-person event in which competitors perform offensive and defensive movements against a virtual opponent. Judges award points based on strength, speed, rhythm, and balance. In kumite, two competitors fight for 3 minutes or until one has collected 8 more points than the other. A punch to the head or body scores 1 point. A kick to the body gets 2 points, and a high kick to the head gains 3. You may hear this while watching a fight.
The Czech karateka landed a punch to the head, scoring a yuko.
Karateka is a Japanese word for a karate competitor, and you should know what yuko is.
Have you ever tried skateboarding? There are two kinds of competition, street and park. In the park event, skateboarders launch themselves into the air from an area that looks like an empty swimming pool. They receive points for performing tricks, like jumping and turning in the air. In street skateboarding, competitors perform tricks on things you might find on a street, such as stairs, benches, and railings. This is one sport that definitely attracts younger people to the games. 2 13-year-olds, Momiji Nishiya of Japan and Reisa Leal of Brazil, won the gold and silver for street skateboarding earlier this week.
As Nishiya skated to the gold on Monday, you might have heard the announcer say,
"If she can put down one of her signature tricks, frontside crook, she does it! Massive score coming her way!"
Sport climbing is a new sport to the Olympics. There are three things each player must do: speed, bouldering, and lead. In speed, two climbers go up a 15-meter-high wall. The men's winner usually makes the climb within 5 or 6 seconds. In bouldering, competitors climb several fixed routes on a 4.5-meter wall within 4 minutes. In the lead event, climbers attempt to move as high as possible on a wall measuring over 15 meters in height within 6 minutes. Scores from all three events are gathered to get a final result.
And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Now we bring you our American history program, The Making of a Nation. Today we look at the start of the American Revolution. Here is Steve Ember.
The road to revolution in the late 1700s took several years. There were protests against the British policy of taxing the colonies without giving them representation in Parliament. To prevent trouble, the British sent thousands of soldiers to Boston, the largest city in Massachusetts. Jane Gordon, the Director of Education and Public Programs at the Massachusetts Historical Society, explains the mood at the time.
We're looking at a time of great tension. We're looking at a time when there's an expectation, I think, on both sides that something will happen, but nobody knows exactly what or when.
On March 5th, 1770, that tension led to violence. It was the end of winter, but the weather was still very cold. A small group of colonists began throwing rocks and pieces of ice at soldiers guarding a public building. They were joined by others, and the soldiers became frightened. They fired their guns. Five colonists were killed. The shooting became known as the Boston Massacre. The people of Massachusetts were extremely angry. The soldiers were tried in court for murder. Most of them were found innocent. The others received minor punishments. Fearing more violence, the British Parliament removed most of the taxes on the colonists. Only the tax on tea remained. The tensions eased for a while. Imports of British goods increased. The colonists seemed satisfied with the situation until a few years later. Then the Massachusetts colony once again became involved in a dispute with Great Britain. The trouble started because the government wanted to help the British East India Company. That company organized all the trade between India and other countries in the British Empire. By 1773, the company had become weak. The British government decided to let the company sell tea directly to the American colonies. The colonies would still have to pay a tea tax. The Americans did not like this new plan. They felt they were being forced to buy their tea from only one company. Officials in the colonies of Pennsylvania and New York sent ships from the East India Company back to Britain. In Massachusetts, the British governor wanted to collect the tea tax and enforce the law. When the ships arrived in Boston, some colonists tried to block their way. The ships remained just outside the harbor without unloading their goods. On the night of December 16, 1773, a group of colonists went out in a small boat. They got on a British ship and threw all the tea into the water. Destroying the tea was a serious crime. The colonists were dressed as American Indians, so the British would not recognize them. But the people of Boston knew who they were. A crowd gathered to cheer them. That incident, the night when British tea was thrown into Boston Harbor, became known as the Boston Tea Party.
And all of a sudden, with the Tea Party, they say, enough is enough.
Gordon Wood, a history professor at Brown University in Rhode Island, says the Tea Party made Britain furious with the colonies. Parliament reacted by passing a series of laws that punished the whole Massachusetts colony for the actions of a few men. One of these laws closed the port of Boston until the tea was paid for. Other laws strengthened the power of the British governor and weakened the power of local officials throughout the colonies. The laws were called the Coercive Acts. Historian Gordon Wood says they helped unite all the colonies against Britain, even though not everybody approved of the Boston Tea Party.
The Virginians are appalled at the Tea Party. They just think that's just terrible, destruction of all that property. But when they see what the British do, the Coercive Acts, they say to themselves, if they can do that to Massachusetts, the British can do that to us. And they're on board. And that really is the turning point.
In June of 1774, Massachusetts called for a meeting of delegates from all the other colonies to consider joint action against Britain. This meeting was called the First Continental Congress. It was held in the city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in September of 1774. All the colonies except one were represented. The southern colony of Georgia did not send a delegate. The delegates agreed that the British Parliament had no right to control trade with the American colonies or to make any laws that affected them. They said the people of the colonies must have the right to take part in any legislative group that made laws for them. The First Continental Congress approved a series of documents that condemned all British actions in the colonies after 1763. The delegates approved a proposal by Massachusetts saying that the people could use weapons to defend their rights. They also organized a Continental Association to boycott British goods and to stop all exports to any British colony or to Britain itself. Local committees were created to enforce the boycott. One of the delegates to the First Continental Congress was John Adams of Massachusetts. Years later, he would say that by the time the meeting took place, the American Revolution had already begun. King George II announced that the New England colonies were in rebellion. Parliament made the decision to use troops against the colonists in Massachusetts in January of 1775. The people of Massachusetts formed a provincial assembly and began training men to fight. Soon, armed groups were doing military exercises in towns all around Massachusetts and in other colonies. British officers received their orders in April 1775. By that time, the colonists had been gathering weapons in the town of Concord, about 30 kilometers west of Boston.
It's a gentle landscape. There are no great mountains. There are no great valleys or waterfalls. It's a gently rolling hillside farm landscape. There are two rivers that come together to form another river.
Jane Gordon from the Massachusetts Historical Society lives in the area. She describes what the scene must have been like.
The houses are mostly made of wood. Many of them are not painted. In April, the leaves would just be budding out. Things would be greening up. And actually, the first day of the Revolution was a very warm spring day.
The British forces were ordered to seize the colonists' weapons. But the colonists were prepared. They knew that the British were coming. Years later, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow wrote a poem about what happened. The poem is about Paul Revere, one of three men who helped warn the colonial troops that the British were coming.
Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere on the 18th of April in 75. Hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. He said to his friend, "If the British march by land or sea from the town tonight, hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch of the North Church Tower as a signal light. One, if by land, and two, if by sea. And I on the opposite shore will be ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm for the country folk to be up and to arm."
When the British reached the town of Lexington, they found it protected by about 70 colonial troops. These citizen soldiers were called Minutemen. They had been trained to fight with only a minute's warning. Eight colonists were killed. Each side accused the other of firing the first shot in that first battle of the American Revolution. It became known as the shot heard round the world. From Lexington, the British marched to Concord, where they destroyed whatever supplies the colonists had not been able to save. Other colonial troops rushed to the area. A battle at Concord's North Bridge forced the British to march back to Boston. It was the first day of America's War for Independence. When it was over, almost 300 British troops had been killed. Fewer than 100 Americans had died. The British troops had marched in time with their drummers and pipers playing Yankee Doodle. A Yankee Doodle was a man who did not know how to fight. The song was meant to insult the Americans, but in the end, they were very proud of it.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.